Blog Talk Radio.
Gonna tell you a little bedtime tale, legend it will become. Burgers flying out the door, sail on, 2-for-1, no concern for the future, living for today. Fast food bite on your way, lay it all to waste. The masses are afflicted now. Moo, mad cow, mad cow. Mad cow, line dance song.
Hey, Sign Guy Nation, QT and Sign Guy with you here on another Friday. Some show notes really quick before we jump into things. Tonight, WCWO happening at the Outlaw Arena in Indianapolis, as usual. OVW in Louisville, Kentucky. Future Stars of Wrestling in Las Vegas, Nevada. GSW in Alberta, Alberta. All-Star Wrestling in Surrey, B.C., PWA in Cheshire, Connecticut tonight. Tomorrow night, DOA in Portland, Oregon. Legacy Wrestling in Mannheim, Pennsylvania. Future Stars of Wrestling returning to Las Vegas tomorrow. EWF in San Bernardino, California. PAW in East Haven, Connecticut. WXW in Mineola, Florida. New Wave Pro in Terre Haute, Indiana. IJW in Charlton, Massachusetts. IWF in Nutley, New Jersey. NYWC in Deer Park, New York. VPW in Center Reach, New York. XWE in Nelsonville, Ohio. The NWA in Amarillo, Texas. And AIWF in Chattanooga, Tennessee tomorrow. Without further ado, I want to bring our guest on. He is from the great Pacific Northwest. Welcome to the show, Draven Vargas.
Thank you for having me on.
Our pleasure to have you. And since, unbelievably, this is your first time on our program, we're going to give you the first-timer's question. What got you into the business of professional wrestling?
Well, since I was a really little kid, some of my earliest memories are me and my brother watching wrestling together, wrestling around in the living room, on the furniture. Matter of fact, wrestling was even banned at our house for a while because we broke my parents' bed from warrior slamming each other on the bed. And then when I was about 18, 19, just out of high school, I had a buddy that was over there playing basketball, and he asked me if I'd ever be interested in training to be a pro wrestler with Buddy Rose. And I was like, why haven't you asked me already? You know, this is what I've dreamed of being my entire life, and I've never looked back since then.
So you attended the Buddy Rose School of Wrestling. Now, was Buddy still pretty active in training when you started, or had Ed taken over the in-ring at that point?
For the most part, most of the work was done with Ed. Buddy did get in there for a few things, usually character stuff, but most of it was with Ed.
Looking back at their history, and they've trained a lot of people up here in the Pacific Northwest, do you think that you could have gone to a school with two people more qualified than Buddy and Ed when it comes to professional wrestling in the Pacific Northwest?
Absolutely not. You know, I actually was a little bit before the school, you know, like Quiz, Nate Andrews, Jason Sullivan, all those guys were going there. I wish I'd have been able to work out with all those guys earlier. I ended up going on and training with Sandy Barr, which was a great set of wrestling skills as well. But Buddy and Colonel were just so amazing, not just in the ring, but developing your character, making sure you're, you know, you always were in that mindset.
In addition to wrestling, I know for a while you also did some referee work up in Washington. Had you been shown that aspect of the business when you initially trained, or was that something that you got thrust into spur of the moment?
It's kind of spur of the moment. Caden needed a referee, and he asked me if I'd be okay with it, and I said, sure, whatever, I'll give it a shot. And I hadn't really ever had referee-specific training, but I definitely know what I usually look for in a referee during a match, and so that's what I just try to do.
The referee aspect of things usually overlooked by a lot of promotions, sadly enough. A lot of times they'll just use whoever they have on hand and slap a referee shirt on them and send them to the ring without any training or knowledge on how to do it. Who do you look for as far as referees in the Pacific Northwest when you're wrestling? Who do you think are some of the better guys that more promotions should take a look at?
A lot of the guys that I've had the most experience with and in the past I've usually asked for as my referee have either retired or have moved on to being wrestlers. Chris Lineker was an amazing referee. Usually he was, especially with tag matches, I always wanted him as my ref. Trying to think right now, because I like all the DOA's referees. They got a good, you know, Dick Champagne was a great referee, but now he's moved on to being Little Dominic Hess. I like JR. And you were always a great ref when I wrestled at BCW. So
I appreciate that. Now, in addition to wrestling and refereeing, you also have come out with some pretty interesting merchandise in your day. What would you say has been your most successful merchandise to date?
Hands down, back in the day, I used to put my little Draven Vargas smiley face on wristbands, and they're just little like sweatband things. And everything I took to the show would get sold. Every show down in Dove C, down in Springfield, I couldn't keep those on hand. That and lighters. I also did a big long series of lighters, and I would put logos on lighters, and those always sold really well too.
I've noticed in this area that merchandise isn't something that a lot of wrestlers put much thought or effort into, sadly. Do you think that in our area, a lot of the wrestlers are sort of not reaching their potential as far as pay from shows because they don't really market themselves as far as merchandising goes?
Absolutely. I know when I first started doing merchandise, I was, you know, a couple guys would have shirts once in a while or 8x10s, but I was the first guy that was doing, you know, all the little stuff, lots of different varieties of 8x10s, putting my logos on lots of shirts, different logos for, you know, really trying to sell more than one of each item too. That's what I always notice is if you have color variation and logo variation, then people aren't going to just buy one item. They're going to buy multiple items. So I really think that with a lot of the guys, you know, having a shirt and a couple 8x10s, and they don't change it up every, you know, so often, you know, every couple of years they'll get a new picture or a new logo, but they're not changing it up every 6 months to try to get new sales. I really think that a lot of the guys are cutting themselves short. And at the same point in time, a lot of guys are talking about how little they make at shows. So, yeah, I definitely agree with what you're saying, that if they just put a little more effort in marketing themselves and selling that merchandise and being creative with their merchandise, they'd make a lot more money. I remember lots of times I would take home over $100 just in merchandise sales, and it was amazing. I loved it.
Do you have an opinion as to why merchandising isn't really emphasized up here? I know in different areas of the country, a lot of wrestlers have entire tables full of various pieces of merchandise, and it's a really big thing like in the South and the Midwest.
Yeah, I think part of it is just the fact that even at their greatest here in the Northwest, I've never really noticed a ridiculous amount of sales. You know, you might get a lot of sales one night. Like I said, there's a lot of times I was taking home over $100, and there'd be times I'd sell two lighters and take home $4. Which still is $4 more than I had, but some guys that are looking at that may be seeing it at the wrong time, seeing when sales are low as opposed to really high, and being like, you know, it's not the worth the effort, because it's a lot of effort. You know, you got to find somebody that can make you a logo, some, you know, a good idea to start with. You got to pose for the pictures and go through dozens or hundreds of pictures to find just the right picture or just the right logo, just the right font, whatever it is. It's a lot of work. I definitely know that. And it's also, for a lot of guys, it's a big investment, especially with shirts. You know, you're looking at that initial startup, and it's a lot of times you're spending hundreds of dollars just to try to make money. And a lot of guys, that's not feasible, because it's going to take them, you know, months to get that money back.
Very good point. Now, you've been around for quite some time now, and I'm sure you've had and seen a few injuries occur. It's just part of the nature of the business. What's some of the bigger injuries that you've had and some of the bigger ones that you've been witness to in locker rooms?
As far as I'm concerned, most injuries have been pretty incidental. I've broken my nose, I don't know, a dozen or two times. I've had a few concussions. As far as big injuries, when I was first getting into training, I blew out my knee and was sidelined for a couple months. And then once I actually started wrestling, I actually cracked the ball of my shoulder joint and ended up with like a pretty, I mean, my whole arm turned purple pretty much because all the blood in there, and was out. That put me out for about a month till that all healed, because they're like, if it breaks all the way through, we're going to have to pin you all back together. And I wasn't looking forward to that. As far as injuries I've seen, I think the two that stand out the most that I've seen in person, one of them was CJ Edwards wrestling in, I believe it was a TLC match. Yeah, for DOA. It was their anniversary a while ago. And Ethan HD was on a ladder that was bridged from one ladder to the ropes. And CJ climbed up the ladder that was standing up and went to Hurricane Rana him off. And Ethan slipped, crotched himself on the one ladder, and CJ basically jumped from the top of the ladder and landed right on the back of his head. And if that wasn't enough, then the ladder came down and hit him in the back of the head as well. And we all thought he was dead. He got up, he finished the match. Afterwards, I went up and had conversations with him, and I had the same conversation with him about six times. Two of those times was in the same actual conversation. Like, I brought up the bump he just took off the top of the ladder. He was like, no, that's crazy, man. I didn't do that. Told him, yeah, he did. We went on, talked about something else, went back. But yeah, but that bump was crazy. And he asked what I was talking about. He had no idea what I was talking about 2 minutes before. And that was one of the most massive concussions I've seen. That we all were really worried about him. And it took, because he didn't remember, it took, I think it was Quiz and Nate Andrews, probably 3 or 4 hours just to get him to go into the hospital to get checked out. And he ended up okay, but it scared a lot of us. And other than that, Dr. Cleaver was in a hardcore match down in Eugene and was put through a flaming table, and his shorts started on fire, and he got burnt so bad that when I was pouring water down his back, you could actually see the water go underneath his skin and then come out another, like, burn that he came out. It was just, it was bad. It covered, like, half his back almost.
Speaking about concussions, they've been sort of a hot topic in the last few years as we've learned more and more about the effects and the long-term effects and the implications of having too many. Do you have a personal opinion on if anything should be done to regulate concussions as it concerns independent professional wrestling?
Well, part of it, I would say I've really seen it happen. A lot. It used to be, when I first got into the business, it was pretty much, hey, are you okay to wrestle? Okay, well, I'll take your word for it, and we'll go wrestle. You know, and then that guy could be still have that massive concussion, not necessarily feel the effects all the time, or just really want to get back in the ring and totally forego that and go out there and get re-injured even worse. Nowadays, I'm seeing promoters that are like, well, you got a concussion, I'm going to let you sit out for a month or two before, you know, or till you give me a doctor's note that says that you're okay. Like Jeremy Blanchard recently, it's one of the saddest things. One of my personal favorite wrestlers I've ever seen in my entire life. First time I laid eyes on him, first independent show I went to in the area. I said, that guy right there is a wrestler. You know, there's lots of guys that dress up like wrestlers and go out there and have matches. But there's a few guys that you look at and you say, that guy right there, he's a wrestler. And Jeremy just had that. And he had, I think they said, 3 concussions in 5 months. And, you know, even with that healing time, that's not enough time for those permanent injuries to go away. And if you continue to get those injuries, it's hard to say what to, you know, because I know if I had a bunch of concussions, I would still want to be in that ring, no matter how much I was risking my injury. But I just think overall the whole world's moving towards protecting our athletes as opposed to just using them up until they're nothing anymore and casting them away for the new guy. And I really like that. And I'd like to see it, the whole industry and all of sports continue to move that way.
Absolutely. As someone that had 3 separate brain injuries in a single match, it sometimes takes a locker room to force a guy out when he's concussed and doesn't really know what's right anymore.
Yep.
Now, as we said, you've been around for a while now, and you work for a large number of different promotions. Who do you see in this area right now that looks like they might be some of the more promising rookies that can be the stars of this area in the next 3 to 5 years?
There's a lot of really good rookies right now, especially, you know, between Dub C School, the Grappler Academy, and DOA's Academy with Dr. Cleaver putting out just a great school of guys right now. The one that jumps out at me right off, I'm going to have to say, is the Thrillbilly Cassius Coons. He's a recent addition to WCWC. He's been on TV. He's wrestled Gangrel. I helped train him, and I've been there throughout while he was training. And that kid is one of the most natural, most gifted guys I've seen in a long time. He's big. He's tough. He's got charisma for days. He's athletic. Anything you want him to do, he can do it. It's just, he's one of those guys, I think he's really going to helm the business for the Northwest into the future, unless he gets picked up by somebody and goes on to bigger and better things, because he definitely has the ability to do that. Other than that, both Next Gen, I guess they're not Next Gen anymore, Justin Alexander, and Nick Radford, both those guys, great natural athletes, great naturals to this business. I think with a lot more experience, those guys are going to be awesome too. And honestly, I haven't had as much experience with the Dub CE rookies. They're all great guys too. And one of the guys that actually has really surprised me as far as the rookie class has been Mean Mac Traeger. He's wrestled for DOA and NWWA. You know, he got into this business a little later than some of the, you know, a lot of people did. At first, it took him a little while to get into it. But that guy, in the last few months, has really come into his own. You know, he's been allowed to grow. He's been allowed to, you know, just be himself. And really, he's surprised me and a lot of the other guys that have been around the business for a while, because we didn't see the potential there, and he is stuffing it down our throats and showing that he has a lot more potential. He has ability.
One of the promotions that you used to wrestle for a long time ago was Pinnacle, and I've often claimed that it was probably one of the most underrated promotions anywhere. Tons and tons of great talent came out of that promotion. A lot of guys went on to the national stage. What were your memories of wrestling for Pinnacle, and did you see the potential of a lot of its roster at the time you were there?
Pinnacle, I definitely agree with you. Pinnacle was extremely underrated. Pretty much all those guys that were trained there went on to wrestle for big time. I mean, you had, just out of the training class, you had Ethan HD, you had Bolo, trying to think of who else that was. Back in the day, you had Rolling Too Deep. Both those guys were really good. You know, everybody that went to that school, trying to think, Dave Hollenbeck was their trainer, Havoc, and he, that guy, he did, he had some magic going on then. He trained a bunch of guys that just went on to be amazing. When I first wrestled there, I didn't see all the potential there, but then as I went on by the months, every time you're going there, these guys are just getting better and better and better and coming into their own and becoming not just, you know, good flashy wrestlers, but great workers, you know, and entertaining the crowd, making people want to come see them every month, month after month, you know, whether it's to come see them get their butt kicked as the heels or come see them fly all over the arena as, you know, like you had something like Ethan HD when he was young, you know, or Bolo. Bolo was just so, so intense, you know. And then not to mention, that's just the trainees. You also had guys, all the Canadian guys that came down that are still great now. You had, in addition to that, Bulldog, I'm trying to think of what his name was at the time, but British Bulldog's son, he was amazing. You had Tyson Kidd when he was there. He was amazing. You had Jack Evans. I remember watching highlight videos of Jack Evans and then showing up to Pinnacle, and he's there and being like, holy crap. And, you know, those guys are all, I mean, obviously Tyson Kidd and Bulldog's kid went on to be in WWE, be tag team champions. That's talent, you know. That I think Pinnacle had a lot going for it, and I just don't know if it was wrong place, wrong time, what it was that just, it wasn't written in the stars, but that promotion had so much potential.
To this day, I say Harry Smith versus Davey Richards at the Havoc Haven, one of the better matches I've ever seen in person.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, at this point in time, my co-host QT is standing by. I know that he has some questions, so Thez, help you as I pass things over to QT for a bit.
Okie doke.
Well, thank you, Sign Guy. Hello, Draven.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Draven, I saw your video on YouTube called Draven Vargas versus Sideshow the Clown, and I want to congratulate you on using Sir Mix-a-Lot's My Posse on Broadway for your entrance music. It's almost the polar opposite of Sideshow the Clown's entrance music.
Absolutely. Yeah,
now,
no, that was one of those.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. No, I was just saying, I know that was that music. We had the idea of being MJ's Posse, and we were trying to find music, and somebody just said, what about Posse on Broadway? And at first I wasn't on board with it, but just that signature sound definitely got over with the crowd well.
Now, have you yourself ever been to Dick's Burgers on Broadway?
I can't say as I have.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, Draven, I took a look and listened to those lyrics, some of the lyrics of My Posse on Broadway, and one part of the song goes, Kevin shouted, Broadway, it's time to get deaf. My girl blew me a kiss. She said I was the best. She's looking mighty freaky in her black silk dress. My question is, have you ever seen YouTube videos of Hoosier pro wrestler Brandi Styles in her gender-blurring Target-like dress?
I can't say that I've had that pleasure.
Oh, okay. Well, Sign Guy has repped some of Brandi Styles' matches. Yes?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, would you yourself wear a Scottish kilt to the ring, and are you of Scottish heritage?
I'm not sure how much Scottish heritage I have, but I would absolutely wear a kilt to the ring. I actually passed it around, and I don't think I'm going to take that extra further of wearing it traditionally, if you know what I'm saying, to the ring. It might get a little uncomfortable. But I would definitely wear a kilt with some trunks under it.
Well, did you know that there is a McVargas clan that has taken up residence in Edinburgh?
I did not know that, but they're probably my family.
Oh, okay. Yes, I did like a genetic research, yes, online. That was part of my homework assignment, yes.
Ah, very cool.
You might want to look up McVargas clan, yes.
I will definitely check that up when I get done with the interview.
Now, there's a slight possibility that I could be working you, but I doubt it.
Probably a pretty strong doubt there.
Okay. All right. Well, another part of the song goes, Larry is the white guy. People think he's funny. A real estate investor who makes a lot of money. Well, Draven, the housing market may be pretty hot in Seattle, but the prices are skyrocketing. Have you yourself have any plans to go half and half with another wrestler, maybe not on a house, but on a wrestling ring?
I have definitely had thoughts about owning a wrestling ring or going halves on a wrestling ring with another wrestler. Me and Dr. Cleaver have known each other for a really long time, and we've definitely discussed it a few times.
Okay, well, you have proven yourself pretty adept in a Gene Simmons-like way at selling merchandise. I think this would be a good financial endeavor to invest in a ring.
Absolutely.
The question is, what kind of ropes would you have around the ring? Would they be the traditional red, white, and blue? That's what I'm asking.
For the most part, throughout my whole life, I've been pretty obsessed with red and black, so I'd probably go with a red and black scheme with, like, probably red ropes and red canvas with a black ring, black steel and everything. So that's probably what I'd go with, was red rope and actual ropes, not steel cables. I'm with DOA's, my experience in DOA's ring, I much preferred ropes.
Okay, all right. Well, here's a question. Are you going to be in action with DOA tomorrow?
I absolutely will. I'll be facing my former tag team partner, Patrick Large.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Draven, the announcer in that Sideshow match said that Sideshow hailed from by the sea. Has it been determined if he hails from the Sea of Cortez?
I'm not sure what sea he's from, but I would much rather it be a see you later.
Well, Draven, did you know the Sea of Cortez, or the Gulf of California, is the 700-mile-long body of water that is embraced by mainland Mexico and Baja California, and Mexico catches 70% of its commercial fish there?
Interesting.
Have you ever considered a tag team partner named Seabass? That's what I was getting at.
Yeah. I can't say that I specifically thought about that, but I can't say that I'd be opposed either.
All right, I'm going to mark down and decide in on Seabass. Very good. Okay. This is in my journal log, okay, of interviews. Okay. Very interesting. Oh. All right, did you know that the Seattle Seahawks drafted upward in the NFL 1990 draft to get the third pick in Cortez Kennedy, who was a defensive tackle?
Oh, and it was a good investment.
Oh, yes, yes. Keeping with the subject of Cortez right here, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, all right. Now, your opponent was supposed to be Puff, but Sideshow took him out before the match. Did this change your game plan?
Not really, because I went into that night with one thought in my brain, and that was to kick butt. And it didn't really matter who was across the ring from me. I was determined to kick somebody's butt. And you said you watched the match. I did do that, so.
Yes, you did, yes. But one a part of the match I thought very interesting was that you missed with the Stinger Splash at the 5:59 mark. What did you think about the recent retirement of Sting?
That's one of those times I was, even though I saw it coming with his recent neck injury, it was sad because, you know, he never really, his only WrestleMania moment was that match with Hunter. And it was an okay match, but it wasn't really what all of us wanted to see at WrestleMania. And we were all hoping for another Mania out of Stinger. But you know what, though? The guy's older. The guy's done everything that you can do in this business. And just more respect that I have for him.
Oh, okay, very well said. Didn't he play football in college?
What was that?
Did Sting play a couple years of college football?
I am not sure on that.
Neither am I. I've got my homework assignment to do. I think I read somewhere where he did.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that because most of the story I've heard about was from when him and Ultimate Warrior met each other working out at the gym, and then promoter basically was like, "You guys are going to be stars," and picked them up. And that's about where I know the story from.
Oh, all right, because I know Paul Orndorff played football in Florida. I know that. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you gave Sideshow 11 right forearm smashes to the jaw and managed to beat the ref's 5 count by doing so. Because of this, because of your forearms, Sideshow collapsed in the corner, and that with the crowd's roar of approval, you proceeded to run across the ring and give him a Rikishi stink face. In the back of your mind, were you aware that a rolling stink face gone wrong can often lead to a tailbone injury?
Well, I've done that move a lot, and I haven't had that, but I can see how that would happen. You know, hard skull meeting a tailbone, I can see how that injury would happen.
Okay, now was that a favorite move of Ed Wiskowski or Playboy Buddy Rose at the Academy?
I can't say it's that one I learned at the Academy. That one I watched. I really enjoyed watching Umaga destroy people with that running hindquarters to the face. And I was in a match one time, and the guy was in position, and I just decided to go for it. Crowd loved it, and so it's been part of my repertoire ever since.
Yes, Umaga. Now his nickname was a bulldozer, right?
Yep.
Oh, okay. All right, well, taking a page out of Hunter Hearst Helmsley, Sideshow shouted USA and then double chicken winged you in an attempt to give you a pedigree. But you got out of it and gave him a modified sidewalk slam, which led to the ref counting out 3 at the 10-minute and 6-second mark of the match. Have you gone out with lunch with Sideshow at the Grateful Bread Bagel and Pastry Shop in Seattle since this match? That's my question. Yes.
I have not gone out to lunch with Sideshow anywhere since that match. We used to be really good friends, and our lives just kind of went different directions. Haven't seen him since that match very much at all, actually.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Draven, Sign Guy and myself made a trip to the Grateful Bread Bagel and Pastry Shop in Seattle. And on the wall, there was a painting of what could be called a goth girl because she had jet black hair. She was dressed all in red, and she was posing with a shiny raven in front of her. My question is, do you think Edgar Allan Poe, who hailed from the Baltimore area in the 1800s, could have made a good Pacific Northwest wrestler?
I definitely think so. He obviously had the gift for speaking. He would have been probably a great promo. I would say he's going to be closer to the Jake the Snake Roberts, Dean Ambrose, quiet, intense, crazy kind of promo, as opposed to the old, you know, Hulk Hogan, John Cena, I'm going to yell what I mean tonight kind of guy. But, you know, plus that guy just seemed like he didn't have a whole lot of worry about what happened to his body or himself. So he probably would have been putting it all on the line. Like I said, like, you know, a Dean Ambrose or one of those guys who just is a crazy, you know, doesn't give a crap what happens kind of guy.
Well, kind of like in the mode of Sabu. Yes.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Do you see him with a finishing? If he were able to time travel and come to the Northwest today, do you see him with a finishing move called the Telltale Heart?
Yeah, like a Telltale Heart Punch or
yes.
Or a Pit in the Pendulum Elbow Drop or something like that, probably.
yes. Oh, that'd be very good. Pit in the Pendulum. Yes. Okay. Wow, that's good. All right. Well, Draven, I also saw your WCWC match with Jay Maddox. Were you thrown off your game plan with Kellen Rafe at ringside?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, anytime your opponent's got one of his buddies at ringside, you got to think outside of just your fight one-on-one with that guy. You got to worry about what his buddy's going to do. Even if normally they're the most honest guys, if victory is slipping away, they might get desperate and they might cheat. And, you know, you just got to always keep your eyes open for that.
All right. Okay. Very well said. Okay. Now, what was the tuition at the Buddy Rose Wrestling School, the tuition?
That one was, I think, $50 a session, if I remember correctly. And that was like a two-hour session.
Oh, okay. All right. How do you think Sideshow would have gotten along with Ed Wiskowski?
I think they probably would have gotten along really well. They definitely have a similar personality from, you know, hanging around the two of them. They're both big-time jokesters, you know, heavy, more crude sense of humor, I would say. And so I think they would have gotten along well, and they probably did. I'm sure they had interactions.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, does DOA have a good concession stand?
Yeah, usually they got, you know, a pretty full concession stand. They'll have candy, soda, pizza, hot dogs, pretty much all the things that you would normally want at a show.
Do you know where DOA will be tomorrow?
Yes, tomorrow night they'll be at the Waddles Boys and Girls Club in Southeast Portland. I don't have the exact address, but I do know, I think it's in the Johnson Creek Highway somewhere area or Foster area. I can't remember 100%, but I know it's right in that general kind of area.
Okay, that's the Waddles Boys and Girls Club. Okay.
Yep.
All right. I might be able to be making my long-awaited return to DOA.
Well, that's going to be a long-awaited return for DOA itself. The company's been out of action for a few months, and they're looking back. I mean, they call the show Best of the Best, and they're really looking to prove that. You know, we're all going to go out there and just put our bodies on the line to show what DOA was built on and what DOA still is.
Now, I still have a Draven Vargas shirt that I got at the Oregon National Guard Armory, which sits on the Columbia River near the Portland Airport. That was from about 4.5 years ago.
Yep.
Yes.
yeah. That, okay. Actually, are you talking about, like, that would have been about the time that Finley came in for DOA?
Yes.
Or was that... Yeah, I know that was – those are some of my favorite shows of all time. Finley's one of my top five wrestlers of all time. So getting to meet him, and we did a seminar with him. It was just one of the most amazing experiences of my life.
Wow. Very – okay, Fit Finley. Okay, very good. Okay. Yeah, I'd always like it. I would have loved it if Fit Finley would have formed a tag team with Sheamus.
Yeah, that would have been a great team, like some Irish pride going on, like
yes.
the new Irish brawler learning from the old Irish brawler.
I'm going to try to contact Fit Finley and see if he knows about the McVargas clan in Scotland.
Oh, that sounds like a great idea.
I'm sure he'll try to take the call, yes. Okay. All right.
I'm sure he'll get right through.
Yes. Well, do you have any plans to wrestle at WPW or Woodland Pro Wrestling, should they offer a summer card in Woodland at that burger restaurant?
I definitely would be open to the idea. I was there last summer. The crowd was awesome there. I really enjoyed everything about the show, so I would definitely be open to that if they're going to have another show.
Yeah, the weather was very nice that night. Very nice. Yes.
Oh, yes.
Okay. All right. Well, Draven, we play a game here on Turnbuckle Turmoil called Bring on the Choice, Bring on the Funk. And we, it's going to be word association. I'm scrapping Bring on the Choice, Bring on the Funk. Word association is like when you're at the psychiatrist's office and you're given a subject matter or place card, a picture, and you're supposed to describe that in one word. I'm going to list off a bunch of Northwest wrestlers, and you can give me, hopefully, what will be a one-word response of what first comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okie doke. I'll see what I can do.
Oh, okay. All right. First one, Diafula Dabashi.
Fork.
Fork. Okay, very good. Annie Reyes.
Who?
Annie Reyes.
Hair.
Hair? Okay. Sam Sims.
That's going to take a lot more than one word. I have quite a long history with, not to throw off the game, but when I mentioned earlier in their interview, one of my friends had asked me if I'd want to be trained with Buddy Rose. It was Sam Sims that was training with Buddy Rose at the time and asked me. So I have quite a long history with him, first promoter I worked for. So like I said, it takes a little bit more than one word.
Wow. All right. Okay. Very good. Okay. Roy Lovejoy.
I'm going to say drink.
Drink. Okay. Drink. All right. Maybe just one a night in a gallon bucket, right?
Every time I see Roy, there's a drink in his hand and a mic on his face. So,
all right, Gentleman George Michael.
Respect. I have known that guy for so long, and just respect is what comes to my mind when I mention think of him.
Oh, okay, respect. Okay, kind of like in Aretha Franklin mode. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. How about Smooth Steve Rush?
Ooh, slapped in the face. I don't think that's one word, but we're going to make it. Because every time he punches you, it's like a big slap in the face, and it hurts.
Oh, okay. Wow. All right. Slap in the face. Okay. Ethan HD.
Talent.
Talent. Okay. Derek Drexel.
Devil.
Devil. Okay. Beelzebub, okay, very good. Sunny Days.
Redhead. When I think of her, that's the first thing that always pops in my head. I haven't been on as many shows with her, but, that's always going to be something that stands out.
Wow, all right, Redhead, okay, okay. It's kind of like in the Lucille Ball mode, okay.
Yep.
Dr. Cleaver.
Ooh. Hours. I'm going to have to say hours because I've spent more hours in a car with that guy than anybody else in this entire business. We used to travel all the time for Dub C, DOA, every promotion we wrestled for, we've traveled hundreds of hours together. So just hours.
All right. Now, would you say Dr. Cleaver pays 48% of the gas money and you pay 52%?
No, we go pretty well 50-50, actually, usually, and we also usually split the driving. We've always had great charisma as riding partners, and that's why it's always worked really well.
Oh, all right, 50-50, okay, very good. All right, okay. Jeremy Blanchard.
Ooh. That's another one of those guys, like I said earlier, that's too many words, because that guy just... Wrestler. He is a wrestler's wrestler. I guess wrestler would be the word I think of when I think of Jeremy.
Oh, all right. Okay. Aaron Bolo.
Intensity.
Okay, intensity. Okay. Like a newly minted luminescent bulb. Yes.
Yep. Yep. Okay. And just like that, his future was extremely bright.
Oh, okay. Very okay. All right. Superfan Bob Hardy.
Oh, I just think of Bob. When I think of Bob, there's no explaining Bob other than Bob. Bob is a great guy, and he's just Bob. You know, you mentioned Bob, and everybody knows exactly who you're talking about.
Oh, okay. I'm going to put well-known. Okay. All right. Big Vicious.
I don't really have much experience with Big Vicious, so I don't really know much. I know he's big, so let's go with big.
Okay, big. All right. All right, and that concludes our Bring on the Choice, Bring on the Funk. I mean, word association. Okay, very good. You've stuck to mostly one-word answers. Okay, very good. All right, now, do you know the last whereabouts of the tag team Fat Guys in Shorts?
I don't. No, actually.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Draven, in your match with Jay Maddox, you wore a black and red outfit with the red stripes. It kind of reminded me of Portland wrestler Apache Bull Ramis. Did you ever have a chance to meet Apache Bull Ramis?
I can't say that I've ever had that privilege.
All right. He was a staple in Portland wrestling back in the 70s. Yes. Okay. Well, Draven, I'd like to read you a quick passage from the book Body Slams by Gary Michael Capetta, former WWF and WCW ring announcer. Would that be okay?
Absolutely.
All right, I'm going to read from page 149. Here we go. When Abby wrestles, he's talking about Abdullah the Butcher, the fans can be assured of a brawl. His repertoire consists of jabbing, stabbing, stomping, eye gouging, headbutting, and a nice enough flying elbow. When the Butcher works, the action is guaranteed to spill outside the ring, up the aisles, and often into the ringside seats. He incites as much as he excites and lives by the match word motto, red turns to green. Simply put, the fans' expectation that a match will turn into a bloodbath draws dollars at the box office. As long as he's willing to slice his own flesh, promoters pay what he demands. Well aware that his name on the card is like money in the bank, Abdullah has earned as much as $10,000 a week in Japan and $1,000 per performance from smaller U.S. promoters between Asian tours. When in character, he maintains his maniacal mystique by never speaking English. Instead, he utters a crude, indistinguishable gibberish when out of character. When out of character, he's a soft-spoken, mild-mannered, well-tailored gentleman whose fine silk suits are custom-made in Japan. My question is, will you yourself someday travel to Japan and buy a silk suit? That's what I'm asking. Yes.
I would definitely love to travel to Japan, and if I'm there, I'm definitely going to buy a silk suit, because that's just what you do in Japan, right? You buy silk suits.
Yes. Yes. So. Okay. All right. Well, Draven, it's been good talking with you. Hopefully, I will get to DOA tomorrow for the first time in a long time, because I'm not sure if I can make blue collar on Sunday. I might have to work Monday. So hopefully DOA especially. And at this time, I'm going to turn it back over to Sun Guy, and I hope you look up your Vargas ancestry in Edinburgh. Yes.
I'm going to genealogy.com when I get home.
Oh, wow. Okay. Okay, back to you, Sun Guy. Yes.
Thank you, QT. Well, Draven, one of the things that has been missing in the Pacific Northwest on a wide-scale basis, at least, is midget wrestling. It's sort of becoming kind of a lost art. Not a lot of promotions have featured it in the last few years. What's your opinion on the lost art of midget wrestling?
Honestly, I think if it's done right, you know, instead of just victimizing the midgets, which I'm sure was done a lot of time in back, you know, the olden days, then it has a great drawing potential. You know, watching two guys go beat the crap out of each other is one thing, but, you know, watching midgets go do what they do, that's, I mean, that's a whole nother spectacle that's going to draw people that may not just go for the standard fare of wrestling. And honestly, I've wrestled Little Nasty Boy I don't even know how many times, and he's a midget, but he is one of the toughest men I've ever met in my entire life, and he beat the holy hell out of me when I first started.
Definitely a Little Nasty Boy, a competitor that fought anybody. Now, another aspect that has become pretty popular in the last few years is the Lucha Libre aspect. There's at least a couple of promotions in the Pacific Northwest that strongly emphasize Lucha Libre. And with the success of the Lucha Underground project on the El Rey Network, do you think that Lucha Libre is going to continue to grow as a whole? And do you think that fans in the Pacific Northwest are going to keep responding to the Lucha promotions?
I definitely think that Lucha Libre is becoming more popular. But then again, all of wrestling is becoming more popular right now. The whole wrestling scene as a whole is on the rise, which is awesome. I've been waiting for that to finally get out of the slump and start working up. And I think anything that's wrestling related is going to continue to rise over the next few years. Lucha Libre has a very specific style, and with it brings a really specific crowd. And honestly, I think some of those guys are some of the most athletic wrestlers that there are in the entire world. You know, on a national scale, you look at Sin Cara and those guys, and they're just amazing. And then when you look at all the independents, some of those guys are even more incredible than the guys that you see on a national level. You know, always willing to put their body on the line, whether they're hurt, whatever, just going out there and leaving it all in the ring. And I definitely think that that scene is going to continue to grow. And the Pacific Northwest, as long as they're given great products, will continue to watch it, and that audience will continue to grow.
Now, are you a fan of what Lucha Underground has done so far as the way they present the product to the fans?
I haven't seen this season yet, but I watched the first season, and I really enjoyed it. It's definitely a unique wrestling watching experience. It's not like any other wrestling promotion you've ever seen. It's not shot like any other wrestling promotion you've seen. And, like, I guess you know, almost it has that Spanish soap opera feel to it, that intensity, that you know, drama to it, that you're not going to get out of normal wrestling. You're going to get drama, you're going to get intensity, but it's a completely different style there. I really like it. They haven't really done anything, in my opinion, negative. They're just still working on it and making it better all the time.
Now, we referenced the Havoc Haven a little bit ago from the old Pinnacle days. I consider that to be one of the best and worst venues at the same time. In your career and all the places you've been, what would you consider the best seated and the worst venue?
As far as best, I would definitely – I love the Milwaukee Elks Lodge. I wrestled there for PNPW when I first got into the business. And WWA run shows there. And in my opinion, as far as a small independent, you know, show, that building is one of the best. You know, it's nice and cozy, but there's plenty of room. You can fit hundreds of people in there. It's got great facilities in the back for the wrestlers. You know, you're not crammed into a broom closet. We usually get like a little meeting room. everything about it, I think, is really awesome. And then, you know, it also offers all the things that wrestling fans enjoy, burgers, hot dogs, beer, drinks, all that stuff. You know, anything they want, they can find. And everything that wrestlers look for in a building, we could find there. I also, as far as a larger building, I really like the Cleaver Armory. It's so big, and again, it's got great facilities for the wrestlers. So, you know, we're not being cramped before we go out to wrestle. And in that building, you could fit thousands of people in that. You know, you could fit at least 1,000, 1,500 people in that building. Not that I've ever seen anybody do it, but it has that potential to grow. And then as far as worst promotions, all the promotions like the Havoc Haven, where you're basically in a industrial complex and the ring has to be pushed over into a corner. So you're losing two sides of the audience. And when the camera's on you, you're looking at wall as opposed to audience behind the ring. It's easy to work the crowd because you only have to concentrate on two sides. But you just can't fit a big enough crowd in there to make it worthwhile. And just overall, I think it makes the promotions in the long term look less professional because they, you know, are not getting a big building. They're having to be cramped up against a wall.
Well, we have a few minutes left in the show today. I want to give that time to you. If there's anything you'd like to say to the listeners, go right ahead. Plug and promote absolutely anything and everything you want, social medias, appearances, merchandise, your favorite ice cream shop, anything in the world.
Okie doke, thank you very much. First of all, if you want to head over to Draven Vargas on Facebook, you can add me on there and definitely keep updated on all my upcoming events. And as far as those upcoming events, we have tomorrow night, which has already been mentioned a few times, the return of DOA Pro Wrestling with Best of the Best. The bell time is 6 p.m. That is at the Wattles, W-A-T-T-L-E-S, Wattles Boys and Girls Club. You can also look up for their future events on DOA Pro Wrestling on Facebook and also, I believe, doaprowrestling.com. May 7th in Portland, NWWA returns to the Milwaukee Elks Lodge for NorCal Mayhem. You can look up NWWA Pro Wrestling on Facebook. That is a bell time of 7 p.m. And the headline of that is going to be a very unique match. You got Wade Hess facing off with Kikyo, who is a gal from SoCal, Southern California. And she's wrestling him in a Fans Bring the Weapons match. And she's the one that put out the challenge. So that's going to be an interesting matchup. Then the fall, 2 weeks after that, May 21st at the Portland VFW 4248 for NWWA. That's also a 7 p.m. bell time. And then May 29th at the Astoria Event Center for PNPW in Astoria, Oregon. That's a 5 p.m. Bell time. And that's about what I have to promote for right now. I want to thank you guys definitely for having me on. I definitely had fun.
Oh, thanks, Trey.
It was our pleasure to have you on the show. We'll definitely look forward to your next visit and make sure you bump safely tomorrow. And fans, if you get the chance to see Draven Vargas, he's extremely entertaining, does very, very good things inside that ring. So, Draven Vargas, definitely thank you for being on today, and I look forward to the next time.
Thank you for the kind words, and thank you for having me.
Thanks, Draven.
All right, fans, we'll be back with you Sunday afternoon. Scheduled but not confirmed, Clarence Mason. But if he does not show up, we already have a guest on standby I think you'll be pleased with. Next Friday afternoon, Dan Severn on the program. So join us on Sunday. We'll talk to you then. Get out there, support your local independent pro wrestling if it's near you. We'll talk to you soon.
I could be the way you wanted me to be. But you're leaving and I miss you, you know. You could be the mountain, I could be the sea. Cause I've been tearing us apart and miss you, you know. Talking in sleep when you're all alone, waiting on me to come back home. I can see you walking far away. I don't know why, so I'll just wait. I'll just wait. I was half a man, you needed one as whole. But I was given everything, cause I missed you, you know. You're talking in your sleep when you're all alone, waiting on me to come back home. I can see you walking far away. Talking in your